And welcome, henchmen, back to another action-packed episode of the Deadly Podcast of Kung Fu, brought to you by the Villains Man, where myself, JVD, attempts to traverse the continuity of Marvel's most prolific martial artist in Iron Fist and Shang-Chi. If you like the podcast, you can keep up with it over on Twitter at Deadly Kung Fu Pod, and you can find the Villains Man on all social media. Now, here on the podcast, what I like to do is give you a nice, detailed breakdown of how the stories goes, and then I'm going to go into a discussion of what I've liked and what I didn't like and kind of take a deep dive on it. Now, today's episode, we are diving into Iron Fist number 3 and 4. Your creative team for the series is writer Chris Claremont, known for X-Men main, the legendary John Byrnes on pencils, inks by Frank Chiaramonte, colors by Don Warford and Janice Cohen, and letters by Gaspar Saladino, David Hunt, and John Constanza. So let's go ahead and get into the first issue, number 3, titled This City Is Not for Burning. Air Canada is cleared for landing in London, but as they do so, the plane is seared into by blue-white fire. Within, 211 passengers are tossed and thrown about during the explosion as the plane crumbles to a crashing halt. Missy Knight gets to saving lives, especially that of a frightened and injured girl, as Danny Rand draws upon his Iron Fist gi and follows her. Outside in the smoke, he finds his friend and the child unconscious at the feet of Ravager, a man clad in energized armor. Being the faster and more skilled of the two, Iron Fist gains the advantage as he goes on the offensive, giving Misty the chance to wake up and sneak attack Ravager from behind. Danny charges in as she holds the villain, but Ravager throws himself against the wrecked plane, smashing Misty, then turning around to blast her with energy. In a fury, Iron Fist attacks and gets the best of Ravager, hurling him across the battlefield. This gives the villain the advantage as he uses his energy blast against Danny, stunning the hero only to escape. Seeing the young girl is awake and trying to help the unconscious Misty, Iron Fist lets Ravager escape. When freeing his friend from the rubble, Danny discovers the arm that was blasted was bionic and missing. As the police show up and knowing he can't afford to be arrested, Iron Fist vanishes into the smoke. Later on at the hospital in London, Danny watches the young girl get carted off to surgery while checking on Misty. She informs Iron Fist that she's going to be in hospital for a while, so he needs to find Colleen on his own. Danny has his own plans in mind and wants to go after Ravager, leading to an argument between the two of which is more important, saving a friend you owe or stopping the villain. Being frustrated, Danny leaves only to find the young girl had died on the operating table, only fueling his fire for stopping Ravager, and makes him blind to the detective asking for the whereabouts of Iron Fist, who is wanted dead or alive in the background. Back at the plane crash site, Iron Fist avoids the police and finds Ravager's radioactive trail to the General Post Office Tower. Oblivious to the fact an officer hears and watches him break in, Danny heads up the stairs and confronts the villain. Ravager tries to tag Iron Fist with his energy blast but loses sight of the hero. Danny stink attacks from above, landing critical blows on Ravage, which breaks the safety valve on his wrist beams. Now furious, the villain tosses Iron Fist, but it's not enough. Danny summons his chi and cracks the chest plate control system that was keeping all the energy in check on the real villain underneath the Ravage armor, Radon, the Atomic Man. Back at the hospital, Misty watches a news report from the tower over the fight inside when the upper side explodes. On to issue 4, called Holocaust. With nothing keeping his energy in check, Radon's power begins to rapidly increase as he warns Iron Fist he will explode. It's also making him too strong for Danny to physically stop. Back in New York, Ward and Joy Meacham, alongside the mysterious man with the snake tattoo, watch the story unfold. The two men argue if Iron Fist is alive after the explosion at the tower, sending the mysterious man into a fury that it will be he who kills Iron Fist and no one else. Back in London, Danny lies in the rubble and is once again greeted by Death wearing his gi, as UT stands before him, reminding him that Sholau's power can heal him as much as it can harm others. As he sets his chi to work, Danny is reminded of his mother who never gave up and sacrificed her life so he could live, giving him the strength to break free of the rubble. Somewhere inside the destroyed room plays a video diary of Dr. Henry Sorrell, who is attempting to create a cure for radiation poisoning. Three men break in stating Ward Meacham wants to pay the doctor for the cure. When Henry refuses, they trash his lab and beat him, knocking him into the nuclear isotopes and chemicals he was using to mutate him. As the video diary continues, we find the Doctor is tired of relying on villains to help him find a cure, and came to London with hopes of finding one before he goes critical and explodes. Now, armed with the knowledge of Henry Sorrell's tragedy, Iron Fist realizes he must stop him and find a cure. Back at the hospital, Misty Knight gears up to go help Danny against the Doctor's orders, but falls weak due to her injuries and passes out. Back at the top of the General Post Office Tower, Radon rains blasts of radiation down on the civilians below. Iron Fist sneaks up there and attacks, using the tactic of calling Henry Sorrell by his real name to anger the villain. Their grueling battle continues, and as Radon proves to be too powerful for Iron Fist, he uses the weakened roof to his advantage, as Danny causes it to collapse and breaks himself free of a chokehold. As the two crash through multiple floors of the devastating building, luck favors Danny as they end up in Henry Sorrell's lab. Before Radon can recover, Iron Fist kicks the villain into his own anti-radiation transformer, curing Dr. Henry of his ailment as the first rays of dawn arrive. So it's a pretty interesting story here. It's a villain that I'm going to dive into that's actually fairly new to Marvel after the break. Before I do, I'm going to play your promo for the ODPH. You need to go over there and subscribe for all your sports and pop culture entertainment needs. And when we get back, I'm going to go ahead and break into issues 3 and 4 of Iron Fist.
Hey, this is Ken M.
Padawan J.
Coach Duffy.
From the Ocho Duro Parlay Hour podcast. Every week, the ODPH is talking sports, movies, TV, comics, and more. It's always a parlay of topics on each episode. You can find the ODPH on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, and wherever you find great podcasts, such as the one you're listening to right now. Don't forget to check out OchoDuroParlayHour.com, where you can find the links to all of the ODPH social media accounts, links to the bands whose music you hear each week on the show, hashtag 607 podcast info, and parlay points, our companion blog section of the show. Thanks for listening to the ODPH. Now get back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
And welcome back to the Deadly Podcast of Kung Fu, brought to you by the Villains Man and myself, JVD. We're going to break down issues 3 and 4 of Iron Fist, and this story reminds me a lot of Marvel Premiere 23 with the villain Warhawk. We know Danny is fighting a villain that doesn't kind of fit to the overall story due to being in the wrong place at the wrong time, but the difference here is the villain's origin is tied to a villain Danny is unaware of that wants him dead. And it doesn't make any type of bad story, but it really gives him the feel of a street-level villain like Spidey and DD, who are always dealing with villains from every corner of Marvel. And it also, much like them villain, you know, the heroes, I should say, they tend to sometimes deal with villains that are way above their weight class, and we get that here with Radon or Ravager, whatever you want to call him. We also get some moral conflict between the two heroes, which are Danny and Misty, with the book. And we get some mysteries solved and some newer ones revealed, and we're about to really dive into that. But let's go ahead and talk about Radon with his basically his background. And his first appearance is Volume 1 of Marvel 2-in-1, number 9. And that takes place 10 months before this, and these are his second and third appearance. Now, Henry Sorrell has a backstory that plays into what a lot of people feared in the world at that time in the 60s and 70s, which is basically nuclear warfare and radiation poisoning, because, you know, we're dealing with the Cold War and everything. And this is what made movies like The China Syndrome, if any of you have ever seen that, widely popular and fearful, which was actually after this. And what makes this interesting is at the time of The China Syndrome, the 3 Mile Island incident happened. There's a docuseries on Netflix I suggest watching. It's a pretty interesting event. And it's so crazy that that movie literally came out right before that happened, and that nuclear power plant actually fell into the China Syndrome. Pretty cool stuff. Just something I wanted to touch on for the podcast. A little bit of history here based on this story. So if you don't want to check China Syndrome out, I understand it's a late 70s movie that sometimes people, you know, can't get into older movies, but check out the docu-series on Netflix over 3 Mile Island incident, and it talks about the movie as well. So, but in his first appearance, I went back and read it in Marvel 2-in-1. We learn little about him, which is purposely done because Radon flees, and there's actually a caption that teases his return, which is completely unnecessary. I hate that. As a reader, even nowadays, we don't get this type of stuff, and I would never go look for a book based on a villain. Just by being told, the villain would have to be some interest to me, and this character is not even interesting in the story. And I get that he's a new villain, but you know what we find out is Puppet Master is thought to be dead issues before this and returns without a tease. So why do you need to tease the character returning when you never tease the return of the main villain in the story? And that just kind of bugs me. But Claremont, he's Claremont. He always does an excellent job with stuff. And he does an excellent job of hiding the identity of Radon by calling him Ravager in the beginning of issue 3. And it's unclear why he doesn't use his real name, but Henry stated in his video diary that he could feel himself turning evil, so it's almost like a completely different persona. And we kind of gather that towards the end of the book, and it's kind of like Hulk and Banner in a way, except for he cannot turn back into Banner. And here's what's interesting in hindsight of reading this book. Yeah, this character is a barely, really, really big missed opportunity to play with the character in the Green Door storyline during the Immortal Hulk. It sounds like he would completely fit into something like that. And the more I'm reading this and I understood, I looked in some more issues after this. And he winds up becoming a scientist for Pegasus for the rest of his Marvel tenure, which I don't think goes past the late 80s, maybe the early 90s. But he never turns back into Radon. At the end of this fight, he's completely cured. But that's what retcons for, right? I mean, that's what we do. Look at the Immortal Hulk. I mean, it's kind of a nice little retcon for what the Hulk is and whatnot. But it's the Hulk. We always get stuff like that. But anyways, the suit is a complete change for the character for Marvel 2-in-1. He's just wearing what looks like a normal containment suit. And here, Radon, from what it looks like, this is like power armor, which makes him look really cool. He looks like this 70s Iron Man villain. And it's not just cool, it's actually needed based on what happens in his first appearance. Wondar has begun to accidentally absorb his radiation based on the panel, which he's drawn from. It's disrupted his form, and it sends him into this critical state that the suit was keeping contained. And I don't know if you know who Wondar is. He's supposed to be Superman with the mind of a child. It's a completely stupid character from back in the day. I know he's still around now. I don't recommend reading it. But based on what we've learned in Iron Fist number 4, probably this was what allowed the evil inside Henry to take over his body. So that's a kind of a pretty cool and interesting concept. But what's bad is once Iron Fist begins to fight him and he damages the suit, and Radon just takes it off, it looks just like plain clothing instead of power armor. So, and, you know, as a reader, I like details, and I would have liked to see more of this suit and how it was designed and built between Marvel 2-in-1. And, you know, just a thought, it just kind of seems rushed with not a whole lot of details into that. And Chris Claremont is a man that likes details, and I'm kind of upset we didn't get this. So, you know, it could have benefited from another page or two here in issue 4 when we're kind of getting the background for the character. But Claremont also expands on his power set because there was nothing with Radon besides making Puppet Master's Thor puppets radioactive so it could be controlled easier. Don't understand how that works. It makes no sense. But I know there have been instances where Thor has shown weakness to radiation. We've kind of covered this on the Villains Man podcast crossover Collision. So you can go check out some fights with Thor. We put him up against Godzilla and we kind of talk about this. And I'm not saying that Radon could have fought Thor or Thing because those two do battle in Marvel 2-in-1. But he could have at least tried if he was just this powerful. The one thing I don't understand about the entire character is Henry Sorrell knew the name Harold Meacham. Why didn't Radon go after him? I mean, I understand, sure, he couldn't fly overseas. That's in New York. This book takes place in London. But it makes a lot of sense. He should have known, right? Because, I mean, the henchmen that show up even drop his name. Now, the one thing about this book that kind of blew my mind is, why the hell is his lab at this general post office tower? That's for snail mail and such, right? Well, I got to looking, and it's actually a major telecommunications tower in the UK that opened in 1966. So here's a history lesson, folks. I got curious. I did the research. I'm going to pass it on to you. So outside of dealing with signals and communications in the building, which is now known as the British Telecom Tower, it had plenty for citizens to enjoy, like restaurants and galleries. So who in the world thought it was safe for a scientist to study and play with lethal nuclear isotopes and deadly chemicals there? Chris Claremont, apparently. But most importantly, what kind of blows my mind is this, and I can't believe Marvel, even in the 70s, went with this, was there was an explosion in the tower 5 years before this story takes place. In 1971, the Kilburn Battalion of the IRA, or the anarchist group known as the Angry Brigade, it's never been determined which one it was. They both claimed that they'd done the bombing. But this incident closed a portion of the building to the public, and in 1981, it was permanently closed off from civilians. So, based on that bit of history, I'm really surprised that Marvel and Claremont went with an actual explosion at the building. That kind of blew my mind. Let's take on the action part of the story. This book's got some really good action, and it's really packed for it, and we get the Brack meter once in issue 4, and I meant to bring the Brack meter back in issue 2, since we've seen it in issue 1 of Iron Fist, and I kind of think that's funny. I made a little meme out of issue 1 with Brack from Space Ghost, Coast to Coast, or Space Ghost in general. So go check that out over on Deadly Kung Fu Pod on Twitter. But early number 3, we get this airplane crash fight where it is Speed versus Brawn with Iron Fist landing all these quick strikes. And he's using Ravager's own weight in a judo-type way to throw him around. And the fight at the end of the issue is the same thing, but Ravager's strength is too much for Danny, and Danny has to sum up his chi, which, you know, that's kind of the catalyst, you know, that Danny uses every time he's in a tight situation, and this busts up his containment armor, and this leads to the big reveal of Ravage actually being the Radon character, and his energy disruption causes a massive explosion in the tower. It's a really cool way to end the book on issue 3, and as we go into issue 4, this is where it shows you what exactly led to the explosion, because we get a cutaway and whatnot to the bottom of the tower with news reporters and stuff. But page 2 in issue 4 has this horizontal panel that runs across the top of the page of Radon's glowing red eyes, looking down at a ruined city as he's kind of going over everything. And it really looks and feels like it's poured straight out of like modern Marvel horror at the time. It is really creepy looking. It's drawn really well and it's pretty awesome. And John Byrne needs a lot of credit for it. But if you were to see it out of context, and my first thought was, like, it looks like Alan Moore's Swamp Thing, or a badass panel of Skeletor. So it's really cool. I'll post it on Twitter if I remember. But the fight at issue 4 is more the same from issue 3, except for Danny uses the basically destroyed environment, very crossover collision style. Now, the fight at issue 4 is more the same from issue 3, except for Danny, in a very crossover collision way, uses a destroyed environment to his advantage, and basically using Radon's real name to anger him to gain an advantage as well. In doing so, Iron Fist manages to ride Radon through 10 stories, I counted them, 10 stories of this massive tower, to the floor that he just happens to need to go to win the day. And it's pretty cool. So if you want a Bronze Age story, basically with a lot of action, these two issues were really good reads. I really enjoyed them. And I think if you wanted to introduce a fan to Iron Fist, this might be two issues to really hand them to. We got some chi power instances here, and some of them pretty interesting. First, healing himself after the building explosion. Nothing new there. It's just destroyed a floor or two, right? But it's just Danny could survive that. It's pretty interesting. Now, what's crazy in this book when he's tracking down Radon after leaving the hospital is he focuses his chi to find Radon's radioactive resident trail. Very strange. There's a flashback to the Thunderer talking about tracking your opponents and using your life force to check radiation trails. Like, radiation is meant to kill people, gives us cancer and whatnot, but using your own life force to track that is a very interesting concept, and I wish there was more in this book that explained it, but it doesn't. And then towards the end of the fight, he absorbs 30 seconds of radiation from Radon and still fights him. This would kill a normal person, which was brought up, and this is obviously the Chi protecting him, and without him actually summoning the Chi for his Iron Fist, which is really cool. But oddly enough, he glows the same color as Radon for 3 panels, which gives him a power boost just long enough to break free. Need some more explanation on that in this book. You know, so add on, you know, the explanation of Radon's armor in a page or two and how this Chi stuff is working with radiation. Pretty interesting. But, you know, who knows? We might get more of that later on the issue and some more explanations. Some miscellaneous points of the book as we get here towards the end of the episode. Misty and Danny had a conflict over the interest of the little girl who died in the plane crash. And what bugs me is we don't understand why the girl died. Danny talks to her. She seems fine. They take her into surgery. Danny and Misty have their dispute. He comes back and she's already dead that fast. Like, what the hell happened there? That's just odd, in my opinion. That could have been a little bit more to add to this story. But, like I said, she seemed fine. And, the dispute between Danny and Misty is just needs to be a little bit more drawn out in this book, especially when she passes out. And that's due to her bionic arm being missing and the doctors not being capable of repairing that, which basically makes her a cyborg, and that's pretty cool. And there's a bit of a tease that more of her could be bionic. We don't get any definition of that. We just know that she passes out because she doesn't have an arm. And she's really looking like a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent there when she's passed out, which is pretty cool. My favorite part of this whole book, and I will never get enough of this, is Death returning, much like we've seen in Deadly Hands of Kung Fu, the Firebird Saga. You can go check out that episode where she's wearing the Iron Fist gi and she's mocking him. I love that image. If I remember, I'll share it on Twitter as well. And that is awesome. I need that as a poster. Absolutely love it. Now, one of the last things as I wrap up here that really bugs me is the dates were very important in the beginning of this run. And we don't have any dates here. Well, at the end of number 2, we know that it's September 12th, 1975. While they're at Manhattan South Medical Center, and they leave for London at the end of that episode, and it looks like it's night when they arrive, and we know this whole place story takes place at night. So, is it fair to say that on September 12th, they left that morning, Danny and Misty, left Professor Wing's side, they left that morning based on the time difference, you know, they arrive at London late at night, we have the fights, and then by the end of the book, it's dawn. So, you know, if they left at like 10, it's like a 7-hour flight. So, time difference and whatnot. Like, it adds up that it's still September 12th, and it's early September 13th in the morning. Just a little detail I'm surprised it wasn't used. But regardless, it's a really good story. I really like it, and I recommend that everybody reads this if you're looking into getting to the character of Iron Fist. We're going to wrap up this episode of Deadly Podcast of Kung Fu. You can follow it over on Twitter at Deadly Kung Fu Pod. You can follow me, JVD, over at JVD of TVD on Twitter. But remember, guys, support your comic book shops. Support your favorite podcast and keep reading comics, guys.